Okay, I'm recording. Anytime you want to start there, Jizz.
Jizz.
Sorry.
Right.
Sorry.
Okay. Welcome to Let's Cordaionies. I am Matt.
And I am Richard.
And once again, we are in our respective households using the quasi-miracle of Skype. I have a feeling that we will be heavy on Halo this week because I did not see any new movies, including The Kingdom. What about you, sir?
I didn't see anything either.
I should preface that by saying we actually discuss things in the entertainment industry that capture our interest. Movies, TV, DVD, video games, some
Halo.
Computer stuff.
Yep.
We do have the new fall TV season starting, so we've got some material there we can go over.
Oh, yeah, and I did see a bunch of that.
With
the miracle of television and iTunes.
But it's funny that I was really stoked for The Kingdom, and I just didn't see it.
I don't know, I was kind of stoked for it too, but then some of the reviews I saw, it seemed kind of workmanlike. Somebody begrudgingly, and I don't think this they meant it as a put down, but they called it, I think, and Jeffrey Wells claimed it, CSI Riyadh. And once I heard that, I'm going, oh, okay.
Honestly, and I heard that too, and I'm still excited to see it. I had another like 50 plus hour week at work, and I'm just so demotivated to do anything but sit on my couch and recover.
Yeah, I hear you.
And it's such a chunk of time to, wait for the wife to get dressed up appropriately, whatever her definition of that is, and then truck on out to the theater, and it ends up being like a four-hour excursion,
Yeah, I know what you mean.
But, CSI, and I heard that, and I thought, oh, that's too bad. But then I thought, wait a minute, I actually like CSI.
I know, that's what I was thinking, too. I was thinking, Why is this disappointing me? Because I love CSI. I can't wait for the new season.
I think it's because you see the trailer and you hear all these great things about it, and then they push the release back to the fall so that it's more of taken as a serious film, and you think, well, not only is it going to be a great action film, it'll clearly have some serious political, overtones, undertones, whatever. And apparently it doesn't have those political overtones, and I can say, clearly that's a little disappointing for me, but realistically, I'm sure it's still probably a great movie.
Yeah.
So I just need to see it.
If it's exciting, I'll be happy.
I didn't see that. Apparently, the game plan, the new family comedy with The Rock, is supposed to outdo The Kingdom. And I just saw that on Hollywood Elsewhere this morning. And he said it kind of like, check this out. I was like, well, of course the family movie is going to do better.
Yeah.
That's not a shock. The G or PG film will always do better than the R film.
Mostly. Although it was weird how snide he was in his... I'm thinking of a different movie. There was some other movie that he made some backwards-ass snide comment about. But it was so... He wasn't giving any hints that he was telling it seriously. It was weird, but I don't know. I don't know. I just no interest in movies right now. I've been totally engrossed in the Halo experience. What can I say?
Well, let's get through the TV and whatnot. And actually, there is a movie-related thing that happened that you emailed me about that
What's
I had forgotten about. Hotel Chevalier.
Oh, yeah. I knew that was coming down the pike.
In a stunt that I don't think has been done since Monty Python's The Meaning of Life.
Yeah.
Filmmakers are actually making a little 10-minute prequel or featurette that will precede the movie. In this case, the Hotel Chevalier will precede the Darjeeling Limited by Wes Anderson.
I'm not sure. I think he's sort of implying that you need to see it before you come. So in other words, that it isn't going to be in front of it, but I don't know.
Oh, I had heard that it was, but
I don't know what happened there. That was weird. I just hung up. It just hung up on me. But anyway, so we're talking about the Darjeeling Limited. I had heard that it was that he had just on a whim decided, let's put together a little short in Paris while I'm working on this other movie. And so when he wrote the Darjeeling Limited, he used the character of the one. You know, none of that really matters. The only thing that really matters is it's Natalie Portman naked. That's honestly the only thing that matters. And I thought it was really weird. I just found this bizarre disconnect that I'm sitting here downloading this kind of interesting movie on iTunes that clearly the most prominent feature to this movie is Natalie Portman naked, and it's all courtesy of our friend Steve Jobs. It was the weirdest thing. It wasn't like searching for porn on the internet. It was like a little gift.
We do need to qualify, however, that it's her booty and some side boob.
It's her booty and side boob. I mean, that's fine with me.
It's not bad. But what's interesting to me is her willingness to do it for this little weird short and, like, not do it for Closer.
Well, or they're talking about this movie that's still hasn't been released here, that Goya's Ghost, the Milos Forman movie, where she's naked in that, but she's been telling everybody and her brother, oh, no, it's not me, it's a body double. It's like, really? So for Milos Forman, it's a body double, but for a 13-minute, you know, barely produced short, you're going to get, you know, full-on naked?
The other weird thing is that haircut makes her look like a boy.
I know, that's disturbing. Thank God in the side shot, she definitely looks all woman, because, my God, I cannot stand the pixie-ish haircut. I'm certain they filmed it not too far after the making of Vendetta, so that's all the hair she had.
You think? I thought it filmed much more recently than that.
No, this thing was filmed like 2 years ago, supposedly, or something, and it was the thing that he put together while he was just thinking up Darjeeling Limited, so it's been floating around for a while.
Huh, okay, well, there we are then. So, regardless of the fact that Natalie Portman is mostly naked in it, what did you think of it?
Well, considering I only fast-forwarded to the good parts.
Oh, my God. You didn't have 13 minutes to devote to Wes Anderson?
I did not. I will later, but it was like, this is the movie where she's supposedly naked in it. So I'm fast-forwarding, and then after that, I'm like, oh, okay, well, I've seen that. But I have read really good reviews of it, so I'm going to have to check it out.
I can't believe you didn't have 13 minutes for Wes Anderson.
Okay, now you're making me feel embarrassed, because I do like Wes Anderson.
I know. That's what killed me. I can see other people, but not you.
I don't know.
Anyway, it is so clearly a Wes Anderson piece.
Really?
It so clearly has this weird energy. And, you know, Jason Schwartzman playing, you know, Jason Schwartzman, who was, of course, the star of Rushmore, and Wes Anderson just, you know, getting along together, doing their thing.
Yeah.
It's just so clearly a Wes Anderson piece. Anyway, I thought it was weird.
Yeah.
And kind of like, you know, the way the first time I saw The Life Aquatic, and I didn't think it was bad, but it didn't connect with me on the same level as the other stuff.
Yeah.
And then I read a Bill Murray little mini interview, and he was saying, you know, I had to see the film about 3 or 4 or 5 times to really get what he was going for. I've seen it 2 or 3 times.
I've seen it twice. I actually liked a lot of it, but it was weird. I mostly respected it, liked the set pieces, but he's boxing himself into this precious little corner that it's intriguing. At least this movie, by basically making somewhat of a road picture, my understanding, I'm talking about the Darjeeling Limited, it's going in a little bit different territory, but I don't know. I really loved Bottle Rocket, and I was really excited when they were talking.
I still haven't seen Bottle Rocket.
It's definitely different than these movies, because it's much more conventional. It's also weird to see Owen Wilson as, you know, it's definitely Owen Wilson, but he's kind of a cool hip person and not the stoner character he plays in every other movie, and he's got short hair, and it's weird, but anyway, and he looks thin and very young, but anyway, the Criterion's putting together like this, pulling out all the stops, and that excites me, because I really like that movie. It was a great movie.
And Wells commented that the Darjeeling Limited is getting about 50% on Rotten Tomatoes so far, which sounds bad, but
that's Wes Anderson in a nutshell, though.
Well, yeah, I don't know if that's a function of not that many people having seen it yet, and it sort of will sort itself out as you get more and more reviews. I'll see it anyway, because Wes Anderson has earned my patronage.
Yeah, I hear you.
And the other interesting thing, early reviews that are coming out, is nothing but amazing reviews for There Will Be Blood.
Oh, I know.
This is
There Will Be Oscars.
Paul Thomas Anderson, your buddy from Boogie Nights.
Our little
this
god.
We've told this story before, but it's hysterical. When you founded and edited our college's newspaper, our 2,000 student branch campus newspaper, and then you handed it off to me, and my first issue, you're like, okay, you need to let me do a movie review for this amazing thing called Boogie Nights. I was like,
well, I knew it was coming out. I'd heard about it, and I said, dude, you got to give me the tickets,
and I am desperate to fill space.
Yep.
So, of course, I'll let you do the interview. Of course. And I think I said, you know, okay, do, you know, 800 words or something, and you turn in some two-page.
It was about 2,000 words.
You turn in some epic, and, of course, I just need the space. So I don't edit it at all. I just plop it in there to take up the space. And
that movie, I mean, it was, I remember walking out of that movie, and I took my dad to it. I go, you know, I got an extra ticket. I thought, Dad, maybe you'll go see a movie. And I knew what it was about. And I knew it was going to freak him out a little bit. But I described it as thus. I said, it's the new Burt Reynolds movie, which of course, which of course got my dad to go. So then we go out of theater and my dad goes, damn, Burt Reynolds is really, you know, something to the effect of Burt Reynolds has really fallen far. And I told him, Dad, that dude's going to get an Oscar nomination. And of course he did, but even Burt Reynolds was, he didn't know what the hell he'd made after the movie. But I remember that, I remember my review. I was so proud of this, and it's so, you know, ridiculous. But I compared the scene when they were looking at Marky Wahlberg's privates to the seven stages of grief when people are looking at this and being shocked, amazed, awed, and whatever. Great movie. But anyway, Paul Thomas Anderson is such a uniquely great filmmaker, and by all reports, this movie is A, totally Paul Thomas Anderson, and B, totally new territory, which excites me greatly. And when I was here and they're saying the first like 15-18 minutes, there's no talking in the movie, I'm thinking, you know what movie did that before that I loved, that was so evocative and such a great movie, was E.T. Do you remember E.T.? It wasn't a single word spoken for the first like 20 minutes of that movie.
Really?
Yep. And it was,
I have not seen E.T. since I was a kid, so.
Well, it's a great, great movie, a truly great movie. And Spielberg was such a master of his craft that he communicated so much, and it didn't occur to you to realize, wow, I haven't heard a single person talk. And when you think about that, for 18 minutes, 20 minutes, that's the length of a sitcom, basically. I mean, that's a lot of time. And this movie apparently is similar. I literally cannot wait to see this movie. It sounds so great. Daniel Day-Lewis is such a great actor.
Yeah, he's a stud. There is no doubt. All right, so I think that's it for my movie notes.
Did you read that somebody was asking, and I think Wells or somebody, they were saying that Paul Dane, like, he had filmed like half this movie, had a different actor for this lead character played by Paul Dano from Little Miss Sunshine, and then halfway through the movie, he fired the guy and replaced him with Paul Dano.
No, I hadn't heard that at all.
I'd like to hear more about that. What's going on? That always intrigues me when a actor gets replaced midway through a movie. It's just so not working out that they end up just redoing the whole thing. I find that incredible. So
wow. I mean, you hear about that at the beginning of a movie every so often, and I was just thinking about this the other day, The Lord of the Rings with Viggo Mortensen, and, you know, they had another actor for that, and they had done some filming, and they figured out he wasn't working, and they call Viggo in, and he comes in and does that first Weathertop action sequence.
They gave him like a week. I mean, he said, "Yeah, I got to leave tomorrow for a
two-year
commitment."
It was such a roll of the dice.
And knowing how Viggo Mortensen is, what a special, you know, a deliberative person he is. The fact that he rolled the dice on something so quickly for such a long commitment was pretty incredible, and obviously the perfect thing.
And then the only other thing that immediately springs to mind is actually Firefly, the series. The character of Inara, the hooker, basically, was recast just into filming.
Well, probably the most famous case of, at least in terms of comedies, is Back to the Future. Because Eric Stoltz, remember, they wanted Matthew or Michael J. Fox, But then they didn't want to give him out of his contract. They had Eric Stoltz, and they filmed for weeks, like 3 weeks. And then they just said, this is not working out. Eric Stoltz is a great actor, but he is not this guy. And then they stopped production, and they brought Michael J. Fox back in after they'd spent millions. And, of course, it ended up being great, although you got to feel bad for Eric Stoltz, although, you know, it didn't kill his career or anything, but... You know, they filmed for like several weeks. That was what was disappointing about all the Back to the Future DVDs. If I'm not mistaken, there wasn't any. Maybe there was some Eric Stoltz in there, but that's what I'd love to see, is see those scenes with him playing it. It just must be weird. Anyway.
So let's talk about the new TV season.
Did you watch any of it?
Yeah, just got a little caught up last night. That's the thing about, you know, working insane hours is you don't even get to catch up on The Daily Show.
No.
It sucks. But watch The New Heroes.
Yeah, I watched that.
I thought it was okay.
Yeah.
I was really taken out of it because one of the storylines in this one is that it's set in, like, 1600s Japan.
Yeah.
But, of course, it looks exactly like Southern California.
Yeah, of course.
And that pulled me right out of it, because I swear I've seen two or three different TV shows.
It looks like where they filmed MASH.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of that, but it looks like where they filmed MASH. It looks like where they filmed some stuff from Angel.
Yeah.
It looks like where they filmed a couple of scenes from Firefly. I mean, you know, all these L.A. things that film in L.A., where they're trying to make it look like it's anything but L.A., but since everyone does it, it, of course, looks exactly like L.A.
Well, to its credit, that's one series that doesn't shy away from subtitles and have another thing in language, although they've now this British or UK or this character in Japan that is like a Caucasian, basically, and it's like, I don't know where they're going with it, but it's nice and convenient that now the two lead characters in Japan can speak English. But
I don't think that was the driving force.
No, I don't think it either, but I just find it convenient. But I do like the fact that I love George Takei in that series,
I think that was absolutely brilliant casting.
Yeah.
But
a bunch of my favorites weren't even in there. The Ali Larder or whatever, and some of these other characters. So hopefully they'll be turning up, the corrupt senator.
Because when that show came out last year, I was like, you know, I can't get into any more new TV. I watch too much TV as it is. And I had a friend basically bully me into it.
Yeah.
So I ended up watching it. And I was like, oh, okay, this is good. But of course, by then I had missed the first episode, and I had never seen the first episode. And I just assumed someone would eventually get the DVD set and I would just borrow it. But fortunately, the Xbox Live service decided to make the first episode available for free in high def.
Nice.
So I downloaded that and watched it, and I'm all caught up and didn't have to pay anybody anything.
I didn't either, because I was sick one weekend and I watched the entire series in one day. I just sat down from beginning to end and watched it on my computer. It wasn't bad. It was a great way to get into that series, though, just to watch it all straight through.
It's well crafted in terms of, you know, as they constantly point out, not letting the questions linger too long.
Yeah.
And bringing up new issues and the way they don't.
The wonders of Skype. I have no idea why that is happening and what's going on.
Well, it's pretty.
Yeah. Pretty May.
Okay, so.
But anyway, you were talking about Heroes.
I was just bringing up Bionic Woman. Did you hear that?
No, I missed that part. And Bionic Woman is spiritually related to this show. You know, characters, superheroes effectively with conflicting loyalties.
Yeah,
but
realistically, it's more related to Battlestar Galactica because it shares an executive producer and a couple of cast members.
Oh, yeah. No, I understand that. that said... You know, it's gotten some not so great reviews, and I loved it. I thought it was great. Yeah, I've seen thought it was fun, and I thought it was, and I loved the updating it, and I liked the action. I don't know if the rest of it will be that great, but
as I mentioned in our San Diego episode, I saw the premiere episode in San Diego in a room with 4,000 people.
Yep.
I thought it was okay.
Yeah.
It felt very much like a first episode that, after a series establishes itself, ends up seeming really awkward and not really sure what it is yet. And to me, I really, really felt that with this.
Well, they had to cover a lot of ground. I mean, it was amazing. They had to, like, literally establish a character, establish a conflict, change it, introduce other stuff. I mean, it's stunning the amount of ground. If you compare it to Heroes, it's the kind of stuff Heroes dealt with over, like, 10 episodes that they had to deal with in about 30 minutes.
Yeah, I'll tell you. Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here. That said, I loved where they're going with it. But
to me, I mean, the things that didn't work for me were, you know, the way they handled sort of the implants and, oh, wait till your implants, you know, I have to tell you what's going to happen when your implants come online. And then, like, a day after her operation, for no reason whatsoever, all of a sudden her eye starts, you know, being a computer eye, or her ear starts being a computer ear. And you're just, okay, that makes no sense whatsoever.
Yeah, no, I agree.
I think that, you know, the actress Katie Sackhoff, who plays Starbuck in Battlestar, I really like her, but I felt like they were writing her a little over the top.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, I definitely.
Too much of a stereotypical badass, and you're just, oh, come on.
I definitely agree there. That said, you get the feeling that will adjust, at least for the
series. Well, you hope so. Again, I'm just, you know, it felt very much like a pilot, and that was one of those pilot things to me. Like, they weren't quite sure what the character was yet, and not quite sure how to interpret what's being written, but it came off as trying too hard to be a badass.
Yeah.
You know, and then the whole, you know, sort of the climactic fight in the rain, and to me that didn't really work that well.
I thought it worked pretty well. I was like, for TV, it was like, wow, I've rarely seen something like this.
Yeah, that's part of the problem, is that it was a TV fight, and TV fights, by and large, are very, you don't have the time to stage them right. God, and the other thing, and you might not be as, you wouldn't be as aware of this as a regular viewer, but having been to this screening where they had a Q&A afterwards, and the producer, David Icke, kept going on and on about how one of the things they were really trying to do was, you know, emphasize that not only is she learning how to, you know, deal with these powers and be a super agent, she's also learning how to be a woman. And to me, that just sounded so corny. And so let's appeal, you know, that's how we appeal to the women demographic instead of just, you know, showing a hot chick for the guys.
Yeah.
And I just heard that and I was like, that sounds so focus tested.
Yeah.
Focus grouped. And did you get that at all?
No, not at all. Maybe I'll go later. I mean, I definitely could see why. If they were taking the properties, let's do the $6 million man or let's do the Bionic Woman. Why in today's market, the Bionic Woman is a much more marketable property. I was hoping for and basically for a variety of reasons because of the women thing, but I didn't see anything about this, the element he's talking about. The one thing I was hoping for, and I'm sure as the series goes on, they will have occasional nods to the original series. I was just praying for, just in the background somewhere, the subtle sound effect of if she went to run or jump and you hear that sound. Did they do that at all?
They had it in the San Diego version, which was...
Well, they definitely had it here. To me, that would seem too early. It would seem like... And also, I'm sure at some point they would bring Lindsay Wagner out as some badass... government, you know, leader or something, you know, like they do in those series. But anyway, I liked it. I didn't think it was bad at all. I enjoyed it. Maybe
it was
the mood
I was
in.
But I honestly have no plans to watch it.
Hmm.
You know, if it turns into a fantastic TV and everyone agrees that it's awesome, then I'll go back and pick it up. But, you know, I'm just trying to reduce my TV time.
Yeah.
The premiere of The Office, which I just saw last night.
Thank God that's now on. Because last year that wasn't on NBC.com, but now it is. So I watched that on NBC.com.
But, oh my God! I mean,
it's hilarious.
You know, everyone's wondering how do they handle the resolution of these two characters hooking up, and I thought so far brilliantly.
Absolutely.
And the episode itself, even if it didn't have any of that Pam and Jim stuff, was hysterical. The rabies awareness fun run. You know, every aspect of that was just brilliant.
It was hilarious. And it's hard to imagine the fun. I mean, there's millions of funny things I was laughing out loud in that, but it's just even the opening when he's talking and then all of a sudden you see her that chick's body floating across her the windshield. It was hilarious. It was so funny,
you know. Yeah. And the domestic bliss of Jan living with Michael. And
yeah, it occurred to me that Rashida Jones is in a new series on Fox, so that's...
Oh, is she?
Yeah, so I'm assuming they probably will bring her back occasionally, but that's where she's gone.
Was also brilliant. You know, like, I've worked too hard on my career to give up, and then her desk is cleared off the next day. Yeah. And then the whole thing with Angela and Sprinkles the cat.
Oh, that was hilarious.
I think you and I both know a few people with that.
Absolutely. And it was boring. You know, what was weird was whoever was writing that had very specific knowledge, because what she was describing there, being a person who runs like the world's largest cat shelter in the world, the world's largest, what she was describing there was technically as accurate as you can possibly imagine. And they just nailed it. It was perfect.
In terms of like the fungus under the tail, or?
Well, the fungus under the tail, it needs this kind of insulin, you need to eat this point thereafter. And not only did they nail the type of person that does that, but the actual medical stuff going on. The fact that Dwight tried to end the cat's misery by putting it in the freezer, and she found claw marks
on the French fry bag. That was brilliant.
It was hilarious. It's awful, but hilarious.
But it was great. She's like, of course I'll go to, you know, your house and feed your cat at lunch. You know, what do I need to do? And as she's running down the list, the look on his face was so brilliant. Because that's what every guy would get after having made that offer.
I know. It was, I mean, I was watching that going, you know, oh, don't screw it up. Let's have another funny episode. And it was like, I mean, you just felt comfortable. It's back in TV that just makes you laugh out loud, and oh, it's awesome. And you know, another thing that I noticed they did in this episode, which was really great, was they extended the "we're doing a documentary" metaphor by doing some secret footage, by incorporating in there as they're watching those people. And I thought that was great. It just stuck me out, and I thought that'll allow them to go in a little bit more areas and be kind of more realistic. So it's not like, oh, they're just capturing this conversation, but there's a documentary crew pointedly trying to get this information. So I don't know. I don't know if you noticed that.
I did notice that as well, that it was the first time they had done that, where they basically showed Jim and Pam some footage that was shot of them kissing.
Yeah. Yeah. Although I was surprised. I thought they were, I noticed they shot that. I was surprised though later that the camera, that the film crew would, okay, show it to them on TV to question them. I thought it might be something that might more drag out, and then they would allow the audience to have a secret for a couple episodes that other people didn't.
The other great thing about that is they actually used, you know, sort of the shot from another car footage.
Yep.
Which, you know, in The Office, they'd probably do, because that's what most of the footage is.
Yep.
But it's so much better than like, oh, look, let's go to the security footage, and it's clearly not from the correct angle.
Yep.
It's clearly, you know, too high a quality, which always bugs me whenever they're like, let's go to the tape.
And yep.
It's clearly just, you know, camera footage.
Yeah.
Anyway, just, you know, that show continues to be brilliant.
Oh, it was great. Now we just need 30 Rock to get back on the air.
I have to last week, the Family Guy Star Wars episode, which I'll be honest, I was like, okay, it was a lot better than I would have thought.
Really?
Because A, it was an hour long, not a half hour.
Nice.
And the way they did it was, I mean, they captured most of it, and then at the same time, they're very paying homage to it and making fun of it, which is very similar to that Futurama Star Trek episode where it was like, you know what, you're going to like this episode of A, you love Star Trek, or B, you hated Star Trek.
Yeah.
Which, when you stop and think about it, is absolutely brilliant writing.
Absolutely. That was among the greatest Futurama episodes ever.
Absolutely. But in this one, it was basically a retelling of Star Wars with, you know, the Family Guy character sort of in there. And one of the bits that really pointed out was they had Chris the son as Luke going to hire Peter Griffin as Han Solo in the cantina. And, you know, he's saying, "You've never heard of the Millennium Falcon? It did the Kessel Run in 12 parsecs." And then you've got Chris saying, "Isn't a parsec a unit of distance and not a unit of time? That doesn't make any sense." And you're just like, "That's always bothered me too." So they had some stuff like that where it's just, or when the escape pod with the droids goes off and the guy says, "Oh, hold your fire, there's no life signs." And the other guy turns to him and says, Are we conserving laser energy now? What's the deal?" You know, it's really just pointing out things that didn't make any sense and making fun. Anyway, it was just really, really awesome. Well done.
Awesome.
And I was pleasantly surprised. Also, The Simpsons.
I missed that. There's another one that maybe when they get this NBC Fox service up and running, they'll put The Simpsons on it. But so far, it's one of those shows that has never migrated to iTunes, to any other form.
Isn't there a guy that ends up putting them all in Flash format?
What do you mean?
There is
people.
Not an official source, but
no,
there's an unofficial source.
Honestly, though, I've rarely, if ever, looked those up because I just find them, I don't know. They're often the quality's low, the thing's crappy.
But there was a point last year at work when, for whatever reason, we had very little to do for a period of time, and I ended up going, there's a guy that does that for South Park, too, and I watched a bunch of South Parks at work that way while I was working, but nice. While I was using about 5% of my brain at work.
Yeah, I hear you.
It was pretty good, The Simpsons. It had some good laughs. It, you know, still is continuing in the tradition of not being as hysterically funny as it was, but still better than most other TV.
Yeah.
And there was one joke that I'm remembering right now. He was talking to he was like convincing a Marine that he was a Marine. And Homer says, "Semper Fudge." And the Marine says, "What did you say?" And Homer says, "I said the right one." That's brilliant, Semper Fudge. Can you imagine if you went up to an action Marine and said Semper Fudge? They would probably kill you.
Always fudge.
All right. The last TV note I have is I saw a thing on Dark Horizons that there's yet another attempt to bring Knight Rider back to TV.
Yeah,
only
I saw
this
that.
Time, Doug Liman is attached. Doug Liman, who did the first Bourne movie, who did Go, who did Swingers, and who did the pilot for
the pilot for the OC, but he was like heavily involved in that.
Yeah, executive producing. So that will be very interesting. I watched Knight Rider as a kid. That was totally my thing. Oh, man. Loved it.
Yeah.
Even so much that I watched a Mythbusters just to see them do that. Can I Trans Am drive into the back of a semi-truck?
Yeah.
And honestly, that they proved that it worked just fine. If you're going like 60 miles an hour and you suddenly drive into a truck, you don't shoot out the back and get the differential.
Yep.
It ends up working out. It's really weird. Anyway.
I was 3 years too old for Knight Rider. It's just a little too young for me. But I do remember the show, and I remember, and it seems like a good concept. Let me tell you, though, I was hearing this interview. I think it was on... What was it? The treatment or the business or something. And they were interviewing some guy who is a director, done other stuff, but they also hired him to do the pilot for, I think it was Heroes or some other show or whatever. And what they don't tell you is, boy, when they hire you to do a pilot, they end up giving you points and all kinds of other stuff because even though you're really coming in as a hired gun and spending just a little bit of a time, they really want it to come out well. And so you can end up making a fortune off of this stuff. So hearing Doug Liman say, "Yeah, I want to put together this," and he may never do a single thing with Knight Rider again, but if it takes off and is this, like, lasts for 4 or 5 years, he'll make a mint off of that thing.
I'm sure he did with the OC.
Absolutely. So it's kind of funny. I didn't actually realize how much they, you always think of TV as not a director's medium, but how much they actually invest and give to directors. And I noticed, and I thought, well, that's probably why Kevin Smith directed the pilot for that kind of Heroes not spinoff and some other stuff.
Well, I don't think that was the pilot for the other one.
Oh, I thought it was the pilot.
That's a different case in that that's supposed to be a five, like a limited,
Like
a limited series, like 5 or 10 episodes, and then that's it. It's not supposed to be an ongoing.
I wasn't aware of that.
But he did direct a pilot for the CW called The Reaper.
Yeah, that's the one.
No, that's the one. Gets a percentage.
Yeah, that's the one I meant. I was thinking of something different. That's the one I meant.
And I recorded that, but I haven't seen it yet. Well, I don't know if he did it for the money.
It sounds like my kind of show. You know, the CW also is one of those ones. They're not really available. Maybe it's on iTunes. I'll look it up.
Brain fart. The other interesting thing is that the picture Dark Horizons chose to use with the story looks to be a Koenigsegg, and I'm sure most people have no idea what that is.
If you've played Test Drive Unlimited, that's your car of choice.
Car idiots will know what this is. Koenigsegg is a Swedish supercar. It is one of the, if not the fastest production vehicle. The Veyron is the fastest. It's one of the fastest production vehicles that you can get. You know, it costs like $250,000.
Yep.
Just an insane car, which would be an interesting choice to go with the supercar versus, you know, just a tarted up stock car.
Yeah.
Because I remember
what I would find interesting about that is, and here's why I wouldn't get it. Unless Koenigsegg or Koenigsberg or whatever has been purchased by Ford, by BMW or somebody else, what in the world are they thinking? Because it's the ultimate marketing thing. Why? I mean, the way TV shows are made nowadays.
That's a good point. I can't believe I haven't thought of that. And no, Koenigsegg is its own company. It's owned by the guy. It's the guy's last name.
Yeah.
He's a rich Swedish dude.
So that's what honestly stuns me. In this day and age, everything, it's like that Heroes episode. I wanted to vomit when I heard the cheerleader, "Oh, you're giving me the Rogue."
Giving me this car, which isn't even out on lots yet.
I know, and she's referring to it as the Rogue, like it's the new hip car, and I don't know. I really hate forced viral campaigns, so I don't know if you've been seeing the viral campaign they're trying to do for the Rogue. So on YouTube, they released this video of people playing. Remember the marble game where you would, it's like a little, looks like a table with, Okay. So they're playing, so they're showing this guy that is incredibly good at the marble game. And then they show another video gets released later, so ostensibly, of him doing the marble game by driving his new car. And as he turns, that would make the marble move. And then the final thing is a real ad where it's an entire city where the whole city turns sideways and this car dodges holes where all the regular cars fall through holes. And it, like, the minute that first one got released, admittedly, it's a viral thing, but it was so clearly faked that it had no staying power as a viral video. It just didn't seem right. And then that coupled with, I mean, I guess this is what you have to do when you release a new car, but it just seems so forced. And then turning on Heroes and having them talk about the Rogue, I get the Rogue. I know. So I kind of resent that. That said, that's the way it works. So I was surprised when I had heard, or when you're mentioning here that the supercar would be, you know, this Swedish one-off rather
well,
than...
Well, we'll see, because there currently is no Trans Am in the General Motors market. They stopped making it. It seems unlikely they'd go with a Camaro, but they might, because that type of car is going through the, you know, the retro muscle look, and it's hard to make that look tech and sleek.
Yeah.
I don't know. We will see.
Yeah.
All right, let's... before we get off TV, you had an interesting story about Nova.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, so I buy stuff on iTunes. I get bored. I have no cable, and I'm spending more than I would had I had cable. But I buy stuff, and the other day I was looking around going, always looking for new content. And they've been putting lately that History Detectives show that's on PBS, and that's a good show. It's similar to, it was like the first HD show that they made for PBS, and it's this show where they have different people. Somebody says, okay, I found this, I have this bell, that it's like a boxing bell, and it supposedly was like Jack Dempsey's from his, or whatever, and then these guys go and research it to find out if the story's true or not. So anyway, I downloaded some of those, and they're like every other thing, $2 an episode, I enjoyed that. And then I go, oh, you know what, I like Nova and other stuff, I wonder if they're online. So I go and look at Nova, and they're charging $8 an episode. And I couldn't tell if it was, error or not, and I looked around, and there's other stuff. There's a bunch of, I thought, well, let me look up at Ken Burns and see if The War is on yet, and it isn't, but they had a bunch of other Ken Burns stuff on there, and they ran the gamut from $4.99 to $10 an episode. And the thing that surprised me about that was, although I think you could totally justify that, because they sell each one of those episodes, you know, like I bought Unforgivable Blackness, which is the Ken Burns thing about the boxer Jack Johnson, which is awesome. Thing was like 3 hours long. I paid 3.5 hours long. I paid $10 for it, but it was great. But in other levels, the Nova episodes, they're 48 minutes long, and they're charging $8 for them. And the thing that surprised me is how Steve Jobs has been so vocal about, I am not going to adjust prices, I'm not going to raise prices, but he's got a stirring example right there of some middling price. It's not as much as a movie.
I wonder what the justification is.
I don't know. I haven't heard anybody talk about it. And it was weird actually logging on to Nova, because when you click on it, it took to some music link, so I had to get to it from a different way, and I'm just wondering if somebody's screwed up, because every once in a while they're screwed up. Anyway, I was really surprised, given their insistence, that they would have anything floating around there without the standard pricing. So
totally.
Anyway, so off to, why don't we move on to Halo?
Halo 3. Yeah. All right. So here's my.
So first of all, tell me how you got it.
That's what I was going to start out with.
All right.
All right. So got a friend at work. I got a couple friends that work at Microsoft. I've got one of them was out of the one of them was in Europe this week. So I'm left with the one guy, but his position switched, and he's now averaging about 60 hours a week.
Yep.
Good Lord. And so it's really hard to say, dude, can you go to your MS store and hook me up, even though you should be working?
Yep.
But it's, you know, so I was being very, you know, I'd appreciate it. If you're going anyway, I'd love it if you get me a copy. Not the end of the world if you don't. I'll just pay full price at Costco on my way home. So I'm sort of IMing him throughout the day, and I work fairly close to there. So I was going to hook up, I was going to go by his building on the way home from work and meet him in the lobby and blah, blah, blah. So he's IMing me, and he says, okay, I came into work, and, you know, it opened a little early, and they've got a gazillion copies, and there was a line, and he shows up to get it, and we're going back and forth about they've got the standard edition, and then they have the limited edition.
Yeah.
The limited edition is in, like, a metal tin, retails for $70 instead of $60, and it has an extra disc with documentaries and some other hoo-ha. And normally I can't stand limited edition video games. Give me a freaking break. But in the MS store, it was only $5 more than the regular version.
Yep.
For a total of $30. And I'm like, you know what? For $30, I'll get the limited. I'll get the other disc, and that's worth it to me.
Yep.
So he goes, he stands in line. I don't know how long the line was or how long it took him, and he came back. But it turns out, as reported on, I think, Joystick, some of the limited editions
scratched.
Have scratched discs.
Yep.
Basically what happened,
and you'll get a new version in 3 weeks.
And what happened was the packaging they use is different than the standard edition packaging. And so the discs had one, or, you know, either the game disc, the bonus disc, or both had fallen off of the spindles.
Yep.
And had just been tossing around in this metal case getting scratched.
Yep.
And I'm like, oh no. And he gets back to his desk, he opens it up, and he hands me, dude, the game disc is scratched.
Yeah.
And I was like, no, because now I have to ask this buddy who's doing me a favor to go back and do a swap.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, apparently, like, the MS stores yanked all their limited edition copies because of this problem.
Yep.
Fortunately, when I was going to lunch, his boss let him actually go home because he had worked an insane amount of hours the previous week. So I met him at the store. He goes and swaps it, and came back out, and he hooked me up with a non-scratched limited edition disc.
Nice.
But that was just sort of an all morning of, oh man, this guy does me a favor and it ends up being scratched. Am I going to have to buy a second copy because I've totally bought into this, I need to play it tonight thing? I'm such a sucker. But he, you know, end result, it ended up being fine. Got home that day, popped it in, started the campaign on normal, and I think I got about a little over halfway through Tuesday night. So, I mean, and we'll talk about this in more detail. Surprised at how easy the normal difficulty was.
Yeah.
And then ended up having two 15-hour days in a row, which really, really sucked. And I wasn't able to play it again until Friday when I got home from work, where I finished it. And then, as I sent you in an email, you know, you finish it, there's the end cut scene, and then there's the credits.
Yeah.
And I was just exhausted from my week at work, and so I pressed A to end the credits, and then that was it.
Yep.
You know, knowing, you know, there might be something behind the credits. I know, like, Guitar Hero 2 gives you an achievement for watching all the credits.
Yeah.
But I was so exhausted and so tired. I was hot, you know, hot to get on multiplayer and do some other stuff, so I skip it. The next day I find out, like, on Wikipedia or something, that there's another cutscene after the credits.
Yeah, pretty significant one.
And I was pissed. I mean, 2 minutes later, I found it on YouTube, so it's not like I wasn't able to see it, but of course that's some guy holding a camcorder up to his SD TV.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I'm thinking, you know, it's my fault for not having gone through the credits, because I know sometimes they do this. But on the other hand, what is the point of making me wait through the credits?
Bungie, I
paid for the game. I shouldn't.
I agree, but here's the thing. Here's my take on it. They put so much energy into this game, and the credits are the one place where they can force you to acknowledge the thousands of hours of work. It's not necessary for the game, so I totally get that. So I just thought that. That said, I told you the reason I ended up seeing it was because I finished the game and I went over to go to the bathroom, and all of a sudden I'm in the bathroom, and all of a sudden I hear this Cortana talking. I go, huh? And I finish up, and I come back out and watched it. The only reason I saw it, I could care less, honestly. Halfway through the game, I just started clicking past all the cutscenes anyway. So, but I saw it only because of that reason. And having not been particularly invested in the Halo universe, it didn't make that much sense to me. It just seemed I don't know.
What's funny to me is, you know, I'm not super invested, but I was definitely watching the cutscenes. How often I really had to turn my stereo up, my, you know, 5.1 setup, because I had such a huge problem understanding some of the characters talking, either because they were mixed really low or they were warbly, like that Guilty Spark Oracle thing.
Yeah.
Was really hard to understand. The Grave Mind was too low.
Did you did you pick out any voices? Did you recognize voices?
You know what? I totally didn't.
Because I don't know Firefly at all, but I thought I had recognized Nathan Fillion, and Adam Baldwin has a distinctive voice, which I'm assuming I got.
Actually, I should say I did recognize Ron Perlman.
Oh, I didn't even know he was on there. I didn't recognize that.
He was the big Admiral dude, Hood.
Oh, yeah. And then I have no idea what John DiMaggio was doing, but I guess he was in there. So
I'll have to look that up.
Like I was telling you, though, nothing was quite jarring like it was when I was playing Halo 2 for the first time just last year, because I, you know, never had an Xbox, and I'm listening to the to some of the grunts, and all of a sudden, oh my God, that's David Cross.
Yes.
and it was so distinctive. There was a couple funny things in here. I don't know if you got to them. Like at one point, there's this early in the game when you're trying to make it to this hangar, and I'm running around and I go and follow these two grunts down, and they're trying to get into this door, and they're having this conversation with somebody on the other side of the door going, no, what's the password? And they're going, oh, please let us in. Come on. What's the password? And so there's a little bit of humor scripted things that if you end up in a certain spot, and I found that, and I thought that was kind of clever and cute. It was basically telling you, you're not getting through this door at this point in the game, but, you know, this is a door that will open at some point. So it was kind of cute. But anyway. So what'd you think of the game over? Oh, I didn't tell you. Did you notice, me on Xbox? I guess you weren't online at about 10 o'clock on Monday night, because you would have seen Richard playing Halo 3.
So did you get yours shipped early? Or?
No. I on the way home from work, I stopped by 7-Eleven. Mostly, mostly to get some potato chips. But I thought, well, I just wonder if they're going to sell that. I heard they're doing that. And later I realized it was probably mostly the it was franchise, not franchisees, but Southland owned or whatever. But anyway, the one I was having them sell there, it was totally empty. They had like a little display there. And I go, are you selling these? And she goes, yeah. So I bought it. Apparently the message to not start selling this till midnight did not get to this woman of clearly Middle Eastern descent who sold it to me no problem at 10 o'clock. So I got it 2 hours early and just on a complete and utter whim.
And
played it. Like you, I thought, I'm not that great at these kind of games, but I plowed through it pretty easily, maybe 8 hours of time. But it was fun. It was very well done. I mean, the fact that they put all that energy into testing, essentially an 8-hour game, meant that there wasn't any glitches. I found no glitches, no errors. Even when I was mildly confused, it did not take long to, with a little outward and inward cues, figure out what I needed to do. It was pretty simple.
I am along that line. I didn't find any out and out glitches. However, like if I was running along, I would notice that like in a jungle level, it would take a minute to render the whole environment.
Yeah.
Like first there's a rock and then a split second later it puts the moss on the rock.
I saw that a little bit too. Did you hear why some of this might have happened? There's people that are all upset because the thing doesn't render in true high def, and it's because
640p.
Yeah, and the reason of this, the reason they said, although to its credit, I didn't even notice, and I have a high def screen sort of, but to its credit, the reason they did this is because they basically split up the frame, you know, the buffering into two different processes so they could get these dynamic lighting effects and stuff. And to a certain extent, I like them, but for the most part, they were gimmicky. You know, that it's about 2 years old, this notion of walking from a dark jungle into bright where you have to adjust your eyes, that kind of thing. But there was like a lot of good stuff. I mean, it wasn't the end all be all in terms of graphics. It wasn't as good looking as, say, BioShock or even Gears of War, but then those things, they got that good looking thing by, I think, a little bit through production design. It's sort of a look they were going for. It didn't mean the graphics were necessarily that better. I thought the graphics in this were fine.
I thought they were okay, you know, not super duper, as you mentioned.
Yeah.
The other, and you talk about glitch, but there was one or two times when it wasn't clear to me where I was supposed to be going. Either because the dialogue is location based, so if you happen to be like facing the wrong way, maybe
yeah.
It's like not as loud as it should be.
Yeah.
Either because of that or because I just couldn't figure out where to go. So there were a few times when, you know, I felt frustrated, like I don't know where I'm supposed to go. That's very bah. But
I had that problem towards the end when you're going through those weird caverns, and then there's
that stupid flood. I hate that flood level.
Yeah, and then there's a every once in a while you trip something, and then the little tiny little arrow would say turn this way, go that way, and it's like I got really used to in BioShock it just telling you turn here, go here. And in BioShock it was really good because it wasn't this is your general direction. It was okay, you've come this far, now turn right. And here it was just sort of going in your general direction. But once you, and that level kind of drove me nuts because other levels, pretty much if you died, you would restart pretty close to where you just died from. But that was one of those ones where you had to play through pretty much from the beginning and not die for a very long time, which was, and then I'd start to realize, you know, I don't have to kill everybody. Just get beyond this level, run past them. So there's many times that I just realized I just had to run past them. But even that, you're talking about, you know, never once did I have to go online and watch a YouTube video of somebody else getting through it to see how they did it.
Yeah, I didn't have to do that either.
And in other games I've had to do that, and not in this. It just, I'm not saying it's bad. It's actually a really great game. It just was interesting in its ease. That said, it's, you know, its accomplishments, its achievements. I think it's kind of lame to have an achievement that says, okay, you get 125 points for completing the game at the one level, then you can get another 125 points for completing it at another level, and then another. And I'm thinking that's a lame way to do achievements, to force somebody to play the game three times.
But no, but you're not.
I know. Because if you play heroic, you can, or whatever, you can get all those achievements. I understand that, but here's the thing. It would be very hard to, from the get-go, start out and play that game at the highest level. You kind of
No. I mean, for you and me, yes, but for video game dorks, I've seen a few people do it already that I know.
Now, I understand. I'm just saying, I guess I'm just contrasting it to a game like BioShock. BioShock, you can start out as lowly or not, but get up to speed, and just through extra work, extra energy, complete it at a pretty high standard. I don't know what I'm thinking. I just think, at least for me, because I do have to play at this level, the only way to get this other achievements, because I'm an achievement whore, is to play the whole damn thing again, only spend more time. That said, I did replay a couple levels just for fun. Like, I played the last level a couple times, and once you've gone through it once, literally you can fly through it in about like 3 minutes. It becomes like infinitely easier once you figure out what you're doing. So maybe I'll play it again. I don't know.
And then back into Halo multiplayer for the first time in quite a while. And
first time ever for me.
I was talking about this a little last night on the through the Halo chat system.
Yep.
What was really driven home to me is how much of a difference it is when you're playing with either people you know, so your friends, or sort of people your own age that are competent. Playing a multiplayer match either with those kind of people on your team or against other people versus 12-year-olds. Yeah. Swearing every other word, just being general idiots, or leaving their mics unmuted so you hear the Darth Vader breathing the whole game.
Some
10-year-old trying to boss you around, everybody go to the man cannon. Everybody throw your grenades in the man cannon. And you're just like, you know what? Shut up.
Yeah.
I'm not taking tactical orders from a 10-year-old.
Yeah.
And that is very frustrating. And it's a real hit-miss experience where you can either have an awesome game and then 2 minutes later, a horrid game, and all you want to do is quit. But if you quit, you get negative points.
Yeah.
Which is really frustrating, because it's not your, it's like, I shouldn't have to play out the whole game when, the rest of my team are obnoxious 12-year-olds.
I shouldn't
have to do that.
Until I turned it on last time, that was the first time I'd ever even used my headphones, because I hate listening to anybody, but especially people you don't even know, saying dick and S-word and F-word, and it's like, I'm just not into that. I'm actually not really into the social aspect. I like first-person shooters. That said, I could totally get, after playing a little bit, why people enjoy this. The thing for me is I'm like a middling to bad player, so it does get frustrating to play. I guess the more you play, the more you're going to find your level and similar people.
As we discussed last night, the matchmaking, the skill assessment system needs a fair amount of time for you to play enough games so it knows how good you are.
Yeah, because you have some really good players playing, but they're still a private, and they're destroying me. It's like, there's a couple of games I played, it was like me and everybody else lost 25-2, and we just got destroyed.
Yeah, and it's frustrating because, especially, like, you go in, you see another guy and they both start shooting each other at the same time, and you feel like you should win and you don't win.
Yeah,
and
ever.
You die, or you die super quick, or you go for a melee attack and you always fail. Like, you're always a split second after the other guy started his melee attack.
Yeah.
And God, it's amazing. I hit the couch and I yell, "Ugh!" And I've got a buddy in Idaho, and he says, my dog can't be in the same room when I play because I get so angry and the dog gets confused and scared.
Yeah. I don't get angry at all. I guess that's good for me. I just I'm not that invested, but I haven't figured out a lot of the stuff, like throwing the grenades in the cannons and I still don't understand how to throw you know, the like the little shield and stuff. I never even figured those things out. So I just run around shooting people and hoping to win. And if I'm, and I've won a couple games, and clearly the only reason I've won them is because the people I'm playing against are, if possible, less experienced than I am. So that's the only reason I've won.
I mean, you know, again, you're playing with a 12-year-old, and you have to, you know, you think you're hot stuff now, but okay, I have a car and I touch boob, so.
Yeah.
I'm still better than you, 12-year-old, who pwns me in Halo 3.
Yeah, exactly.
So. But it's, you know, it's. I decided, as we talked about last week, that I'm done with achievement whoring. It's just too frustrating to spend that much time, you know, only to be screwed by a bug or something.
I'm fully into achievement whore mode. I can't help it.
You know, I decided, you know, I went through the whole game on normal, and I decided, okay, I'll do this. I'll try and find these skulls now. So I kind of started going through it on heroic, but I decided, you know what, this is just going to be, you know, a little bit of time here and there. It's, you know, as I want to play but don't want to play 12-year-olds, and my friends aren't available, I'll slowly go through on heroic and find these skulls, and I'll totally look up where they are. I don't want to invest any time in, like, oh, I'm going to search every nook and cranny of the map. No, I'm going to find out where they are on the internet and find them as I go along.
Yeah, but see, I went to find the first skull, and god dang it, it wasn't there. I went up there, and I went over to where it was, and it wasn't there, and I was so ticked off. And then the
Hold on, are you talking about the one on the rock or the one on the building?
No, the one on the building.
Okay, I haven't gotten that far yet.
So I couldn't find the thing. It was, like, not there. That said, the other thing about it was as they point out, that I didn't realize was the skull thing. Those are damaging. Those things cause your enemies to, you get achievements, but every one of them, like one, increases the rank of all your enemies. Another one allows them to regenerate faster.
I thought you could collect the skull, get the achievement, but then you have to activate it to get that to happen.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Because what that does is I could be wrong, but I think what that does is, it either makes you more weak, makes your enemy stronger, but it increases the points you get, and then there are point achievements you can get, like score 15,000 at a level.
You're right.
The only way you can get enough points is to make yourself weaker make your enemy stronger.
You're right. That's way too damn complicated, but yeah, you're right. That's exactly what's going on. Okay. I didn't realize that either.
Yeah, the other, you know, so there's that sort of achievement, which I'll get as I play. I'm not playing just to get the achievements.
So how did I end up with 1,000 more achievement points than you? That's what I don't understand, dude.
Prey and Saints Row.
Oh, that's right, Prey. Prey. That Prey was the single easiest point thing on the history of the Earth. Saints Row, I played 5 times longer than Prey, and I got like a third of the points.
Well, maybe I'll have to borrow Prey from you and run
Seriously, you can run through it in... And there's nothing special. I didn't get any special achievements. You just run through it and you get 700 and some points. It is, and it's not a bad game. It just kind of is there. And the thing that drags it out is like cutscenes, but everything else, it's relatively easy. It's not a bad game, but yeah, it's like a 2-day gift of 700 achievement points.
What was your thing? The other sort of, but not really, achievement thing, the multiplayer system on Halo, it's sort of using two things, you know, sort of a skill point and a rank.
Yeah.
And I have to admit, I'm totally motivated to up my rank. It's I totally want to be a sergeant, because, you know, you start out as a recruit or an apprentice, and then you're a recruit, and then you're a private, second class, or
whatever. Do you get that by winning or by tying? Because I'm, like, sitting here at private, and I get the feeling I'm never not going to be a private. Is it skill or
Hold
is
on.
It?
I believe it's something called rank points, and you get a rank point when you win a match, a ranked match.
Okay.
So if you're on a team, your team wins, or if you're playing solo, you're in the top 50% of the people. And then you get a point. Now, if your team loses, you don't get any points, and if you quit, you lose 2 points.
Okay.
So what's really frustrating about that is, because I end up doing a lot of Team Slayer matches, you know, if the other three guys are idiots, like, you get no points.
Yeah.
Very frustrating. It's like, it's related to achievements, but like, I totally want to up my rank.
Yeah.
So it's like I want to keep playing so that I luck into a good team and I can get more rank points. But what's frustrating is it's not telling you, you know, like one thing that's really frustrating about achievements, the whole achievement system, is you have no idea how far or close you are to achieving, you know, a collect this for the achievement.
Yeah.
You know, kill 10 guys for the achievement. Well, how many guys have I killed?
Yeah,
that's,
I know.
That's really frustrating.
I still don't understand
that. That cuts across all games.
Because I swear to God, I had to have killed a bunch of people with headshots. That said, although looking at it in retrospect, I looked and apparently there's some, like, little dot on the sniper scope, and when that thing highlights, you can kill somebody with a headshot. So maybe
I didn't know that.
So maybe in fact I didn't kill people with headshots. Maybe I was just hitting them in the head and killing them, but not by the definition of headshot. That said, it still seems like I should have gotten that achievement.
And if you had a counter, you would know.
I know.
Almost instantly what you were doing wasn't counting.
They don't have a stats page that you can like hit in the like left arrow or something?
Well, they got a ton of stats, but I don't think
doesn't
any of
counter.
Them track progress towards achievements.
Yeah. And it's not really clear, okay, is it cumulative or is it in one match or that you, you know, or whatever, but I don't know. Overall,
yeah.
Though, I would give the game A-.
Yeah, I'd
give it higher if it was lasted longer, but I think it's clearly a product of an enormous amount of money, time, and energy, and it delivered.
And it made $170 million opening day.
But you know what's
and
funny
then, like,
about that is I don't think that actually includes the European figures.
No, it doesn't. That's U.S. only.
So in reality, it probably made over $250 million, which is pretty staggering.
I mean, it really is interesting on a variety of levels because the Microsoft press release, which Major Nelson put up on his website, you know, talks about it as an entertainment property, which allows them to compare it to Spider-Man 3 and movies
yeah.
and whatnot and say, you know, we made more in one day than any other entertainment property ever.
Yeah.
Which is totally true. And,
absolutely.
You know, it makes you think so many things like, you know, Bungie, you know, Halo is going to be a Mac-only game. They demoed it at a Macworld, and it was amazing.
I know.
And then Microsoft comes in and says, actually, we need this for Xbox, and we're going to pay you more money than God. And they did that, and the Bungie guys moved up to Redmond. And then after Halo 2...
Where was Bungie based?
I honestly don't know. I just assumed the Bay Area.
Yeah.
But... I don't know for sure.
One of the greatest decisions Mike's ever made, because where would
totally.
Xbox be without Halo?
And then, after Halo 2, because they were up in, and the only reason I sort of know this is because the building complex for the Xbox divisions for Microsoft is across the street from a UPS hub in Redmond.
Oh, yeah.
And I worked at that UPS hub for almost a year.
Oh, did you really?
And it's... Yeah, when I first moved up here.
Yeah.
And it's funny because it used to be, I worked the 11 p.m. to 3 a.m. shift.
Yeah.
And in the summer, there used to be cow pastures around there, and you'd smell cow manure. Oh, my God, it was horrible.
I know.
And now across the street from that hub is where the Xbox division is.
All on the way to Union Hill Road. I've done certain product testing in that building a couple times.
Yeah, in fact, I did a couple of early Xbox game tests over in those buildings. But then Bungie, I don't know if they demanded it or it was just a gift.
Yeah, they wanted to be independent.
They got a separate building remodeled. It used to be an Ace Hardware in downtown Kirkland, which is now actually probably maybe a couple of miles from where I live is where this Bungie building is. And it's funny because, it's just sort of a nondescript gray building with security guards walking around the parking lot.
But no signs to say Bungie, nothing else.
No, there's nothing that advertises it.
Yeah.
It's pretty interesting. They get this own building, and now you have to wonder, you know, you really hope that they can do things beyond Halo. Like, whatever their next game is that's not Halo-related, you hope it's good.
Have you heard anything that's coming up after this?
Just they're working on, you know, whatever that Halo project is with Peter Jackson.
Yeah.
Not quite sure what it is, but they're working on that. The Halo Wars, which is not a Bungie product, and then they're working on a non-Halo game. And no, I haven't heard about it, even from my friends that work there. And if they know about it, they're not telling me.
Yeah. You know, it's funny that I think, you know, there's a certain game developers that you just hear our death to work for that, you know, you've heard these stories like about EA games and other stuff. And then others, that you just hear have such a cool commitment, such as id, such as Valve, such as Bungie, and you just think, boy, that would be exciting to work for that. It's probably like the Pixar feel, you know, where it's very creative and very interesting. And
one of my coworker who was a coworker of mine last year, her boyfriend worked at Microsoft Game Studios. I won't say on which game, but you know, it was definitely a you're living at work for a portion of time.
Yeah.
And she, and through him, he had a bunch of friends that were on Bungie, and there was like a Bungie Widows Club.
Yeah.
You know, of these wives that never saw their husbands because they lived at Bungie. And on one hand, you'd think, oh my God, that would be so awesome. But on the other hand, I really enjoy being at home and being with my wife and my friends and not living at work. And that would be clearly, if you worked at Bungie, odds are you love your work.
Yeah.
And that would be really hard, but it's, wow.
Yeah, it would be hard. It'd be fun for a while, I bet, though.
So, yeah, an enjoyable game. I thought it was a little easy on normal, and if I'd known how easy it was going to be, I probably would have set it to
heroic. You know, I told you I accidentally started out on the easy section, and later when I went back, because I realized I wasn't getting an achievement, I went back and go, oh, crap. And I think I told you it was so funny when you look at the way it describes it. It says, easy, the horde bows down in front of you, and then it follows that up by saying, you know, the game pretty much plays itself. and I thought, damn, because I was flying through the game, and nobody was dying, and I was going... And then I later realized, well, that was part of it. Not that normal was that much tougher, but definitely harder than the easy. So I just thought that was funny. So, yeah, but I probably, ultimately, I think I might get into the multiplayer, but ultimately I'm probably not, I don't know, I don't think I'm much more into Halo, and it's kind of weird thinking I've spent, I guess it's like, I don't know how to relate it, but I've spent $60 for 8 hours of amusement. So how do I relate that to a movie? That's about, what, $8 an hour or something like that? So it's more than a movie. I don't know. I'm looking forward to Mass Effect. I'm definitely looking for... I think I would... They mentioned that... And hopefully this is true with the Xbox, but definitely with the PC version of the Orange Box... they're going to have the production commentary where you go through the game and then periodically it's like a director's commentary, and it's awesome. And they said they're going to include that with all of the games they're developing. And I'm going, I hope they do that for the Xbox, because I love that. It's one of my favorite features of all time, of playing through Half-Life 2, Episode 2 again, where you'd periodically go and they would describe, and they go, well, here we set this up here, and you know, we totally screwed it up because we assumed people would think this, and so when you go around this corner and this happens, and it was like, damn, I learned, it was like a little seminar in effective game design. It was really interesting, and I'm hoping when Orange Box comes out, I'm just going to live in that game, in that whole world, and I'm really excited to try Team Fortress, because I'm not a multiplayer person, but it seems so fun and intriguing, so definitely looking forward. When does that thing come out? Next month?
I believe it's October 9th. I need to double check that, because I think I'm going to pre-order it from buy.com.
Damn, so it's just a couple weeks
away. Or maybe not. I've got a gift card for Best Buy I need to use.
Yeah.
We'll see. But yeah, I'm really looking forward to that one. God, I had a thought. I was going to. Oh, the only other frustrating thing about Halo 3 multiplayer is I've got, you know, I've got one group of friends that, you know, if they're online, will probably play with each other.
Yep.
And then I've got other random friends, like my sister's husband, and they live out in Michigan. And I saw, you know, last night, he's, you know, sends me that wants to play message. And I'm like, actually, that was Friday night. I was thinking, oh, but I'm almost done with the campaign. I need to finish the campaign first. And I feel guilty for not playing with them. And then last night, I had some other friends on, and but they weren't in a joinable game.
Yeah.
And so I'm like trying to send them a message going, dude, let me in. At the same time, you don't want to start a random multiplayer match if they're going to let you know, send you an invite halfway through. And at the same time, like, I saw you on and I kind of wanted to join with you, and I wasn't sure how to make that work. And it was like really frustrating between being torn between two or three different, you know, groups of friends or friends that are on. And I like, trying to, you know, do you ignore this person? You know, how the social aspects of how do you actually work that?
Well, you got to do it like me. You, of course, are my only friend online. I have no other friends online. I don't know a single other person other than you. This is funny. I literally don't know anybody else that owns an Xbox.
Wow, let me think about that for a minute.
You probably know dozens, but I, directly or obviously through friends, but I literally know you.
Oh, Ricardo.
This is the world I travel in. That said, I don't feel I'm missing anything. I'm not really into the
actually,
whole thing.
There's one other person that's going to get one in the next month or two that you do know, even though you don't know them well.
Who's that?
Kevin Mack.
Oh, yeah, cool.
So he and I hooked up for some Halo 2 multiplayer, and he's better than I am.
Hmm.
Anyway, there really isn't a whole lot of tech to talk about, other than, I can't remember if it was, I think it was MacBreak Weekly, last week's episode, they got into that whole unlocking the iPhone versus the DMCA, and it's funny, because they actually got into an argument over it, and basically because you were saying, the DMCA makes it illegal to have a phone be locked to a carrier, but what Apple
what I said was, the DMCA makes it not illegal to unlock a phone.
Right, but the way Apple's getting around this is by saying it's not illegal, but it is a violation of our terms of service.
I know.
And then there was an argument between the guys over that, and you know what that meant, and people saying, well, that's a bunch of BS, and people saying, well, that's their right. And it was really fascinating to listen to that after listening to you go have your say about it.
I just think that I'm actually stunned at what Apple is doing, and I thought, maybe it was John Dvorak or somebody had a really good comment on it. They basically, I'm stunned that they bricked all these phones. I was really, despite everything, I'm stunned by that. Because it's not just you've lost a $600 phone, but you still owe this service. I guess you could get another one and continue using it. But I was stunned because it seems to me it is an open question. But the thing that surprised me even more is they stopped all these little applications that people are creating, and people are going, wait, I like those applications. I you know, they were kind of workaround things, and what they were pointing out is that Apple, you know, they've effectively created a little computer here, and they're surprised that people want to have the functionality of a computer, and I'm thinking, so I was just really stunned because I think it will and is. I mean, the backlash they got from the rebate, which I think was complete baloney. I thought Apple, I have no idea why people are all upset over dropping the price so quickly. I mean, it's like, get over it. You paid the early adopter tax and you knew that going into it. But in terms of just bricking phones and bricking them because you've put in new software, I think that this is going to, you know, I just think it was going to cause a backlash.
Honestly, I totally am of the opinion that, you know, if Apple clearly states that, look, if you put on a third-party application, we're not going to actively try and kill it, but if we're going to try and make our phone better through software updates and it accidentally kills it because you put something on that you weren't supposed to, that's your tough luck.
No, I understand that, but I was under the impression that they had actively killed it.
Well,
it wasn't...
Well, there's two things. There's the unlocking, and then there's application.
Yeah, so I'm talking about
the
application.
My understanding was that they were trying to kill the unlocking, but weren't actively trying to kill applications.
Oh,
now, I could be wrong about that.
Oh, because they're connected. Okay, well, that would make sense. That said, it just, you know, at a certain point, these products take a life of their own, and part of the reason people love them is that increased functionality. And so Apple has to constantly play that we control everything, we're allowing people, but it just seemed Apple, like they were saying, Apple has become Microsoft, you know?
There's so many aspects of this, and I think a lot of it has to do with AT&T, and AT&T's clear, well, you'd think, the thing that AT&T is probably more scared of than anything else is peer-to-peer VoIP.
Yep.
You got to, you know, you put Skype on the phone, and all you need is a Wi-Fi connection,
yep.
and you can make a phone call,
yep.
Without needing the AT&T network. And so, more than anything else, they have to be aware of that, and they have to have some sort of.
And didn't people come up with some solutions that were working for that?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I did hear of one.
Because it was all like web-based, but it worked.
That was working, and yeah. that's. I mean, to one degree, you really have to wonder. You know, AT&T isn't stupid. They have to have known that this was a possibility, and you have to wonder what or how far they're prepared to go to keep VoIP off these phones, because yeah. no matter what, it's going to happen. Even if Apple's constantly up, you know, it's going to be the arms race of, you know, who's ahead, Apple or hackers? Apple or hackers?
Yeah.
And I would have to think that the hackers are always going to be a step ahead.
Yeah.
You know, that's not to say there won't be you know, the firmware updates that brick anything that's VoIP related, but, you know, there's got to be a tech way to make VoIP work on the iPhone that's eventually going to happen, and it will be very commonplace, and I just don't understand how you get around that.
Yeah.
Maybe if you had a mandatory software update function, because that's how hackers would get around a lot of iTunes hacks, is they just wouldn't update their iTunes. Because they knew, they had heard that if you went to the latest version of iTunes, yeah. whatever your hack was would suddenly not work.
Yeah.
And, you know, you hear the same thing about iPhones. Well, I just won't update to the latest firmware patch and I'm fine. And so you have to wonder if there's somehow, you know, maybe they will enforce software updates.
Yeah, but that's...
It doesn't
that,
seem
that,
like they could, because you would have heard about that by now, and I think it's too late.
But that goes down the Microsoft path that everybody hates, because Microsoft... supposedly said, oh, no, these are optional, but then they had some stealth updates that they,
well,
that they had to go and explain. And
that's a bit of a – I mean, I understand Microsoft's case, because what that quote-unquote stealth update was actually updating the updater.
Oh, okay.
So now that's – so you kind of see that. On the other hand, you can certainly see the consumer perspective of, well, that's kind of splitting hairs.
Yeah.
And I really feel like – you know, if I have told you not to update without my permission, that's what I mean, regardless of the fact that it's actually updating the update program. You know, so you can see both sides of that argument, but really you need to be – it's so bizarre that Microsoft is not more forthcoming after all of the drama they've gone through.
I know. Did I tell you I got a Vista computer? Like I got another computer?
You told me you had to get a new computer to process
HD video. So I got that. And a couple of things. One, I like Vista. I mean, maybe because the thing's – quick enough to handle it, but in a general I like it, but the same thing is it doesn't feel a whole heck of a lot different than XP, so I'm not totally, you know, it just seems kind of weird that I've heard all these problems, I haven't encountered any of them, but
well, apparently, and I haven't even worked on a Vista machine yet.
Yep.
My work is still all on
XP. Yep.
Apparently driver availability is still a big problem.
Yeah.
That's the biggest problem I've heard about. But Microsoft just extended
the end of life
of Windows 9, Windows XP.
I'll tell you, the biggest thing that I've heard, the biggest screw-up, is games for Windows. Because that was the whole point. This is going to be a better platform. And maybe ultimately it is. But I've been seeing comparisons of like DX10 games versus DX9 versions. They don't look any better. There's no real point to it, and it's so there's certain things that will clearly make development of games better, but it's become a big bust. This was going to be a driving force for people getting these games, and it may still be when Crysis comes out.
I was just going to say, I'm coming in from the perspective of having no real window into the PC gaming world. I don't know what's hot. I don't know what the stories are.
Yeah.
But you know, I am aware of Crysis, and my understanding was that was the first drop-dead new technology, this is going to make everybody pee their pants graphically game.
But I've sat down and watched the things like that, and first of all, Crysis can play on an XP game machine for no problem, and it is, and it also, you can play it with a DX9 video card, and it definitely looks incredible, but in the DX9 one, I've seen scenes, and it, to me, it doesn't look that much worse. You know, it looks great. It downgrades beautifully. So they've created it as they should do. which is to create a game that if you want to have the best, just like when they did Half-Life came out, you can get it, but it will downgrade beautifully. Mm-hmm. So I just don't know that. I mean, that was going to be a big driving force for getting these early adopters and getting people to move to Vista. And for some reason, they've kind of screwed it up. They did this. You can get Halo 2 for Vista, but it's like, great, we're getting a three-year-old game.
Yeah, I was always a little confused by the hype surrounding that. It's like, yeah, exactly, great, but what have you done for me lately?
Yeah, yeah, I don't know. But anyway, just as a consumer user of Vista, A, seems pretty great, and I have not heard any security issues. It seems like they've done a pretty good job with that. And then B, didn't seem a whole lot different or better. There's certain looks that look real Mac-like, but every once in a while it just kind of slows down to a crawl. But
you know, I had heard that a lot of people are waiting for the first service patch,
yeah,
FP1, which they're just releasing into beta now, and it won't release before 2008.
Yep.
And, God, somebody had written an article, I don't know who it was, last week, just declaring the whole Vista thing a failure and saying, you know what, just start over. You guys screwed up. And I thought, wow, that is really harsh.
That sounds like the something John Dvorak would say when he's drunk. You know, it
wasn't Dvorak, but
and the irony is, despite everything, Vista has clearly made billions just because that's the way it works. So it's not, and it, even though the launch and everything else may be goofy, the fact is it's a very stable product when it comes to security. And by sheer attrition, 3 years from now, every machine will be Vista. It's a simple fact, because all the new things are going to have it on there. So it's like, move on, get over with it, and look at the benefits of it, because they are considerable. And the fact is the price of processors and graphic things have gone down so much that what seemed crazy at the beginning, and legitimately people going, hey, you said this machine was Vista capable already, but it turns out it can't handle Aqua or anything else, that's not even going to be an issue by the middle of next year, because every machine will be able to handle it. Everyone. So.
All right. I think we've run this one into the ground.
That's right.
So maybe I will have seen the kingdom next week. What else is happening?
I don't know. Oh, didn't you get my email about the Comedians of Comedy?
Yeah, I keep meaning to look into that, because somebody else told me.
Yeah, they're playing. It's like $20. They're playing at the Showbox. Anyway, I don't know if it's still open, but it wasn't sold out when I looked.
I keep meaning to check that, because it wasn't just, because you mentioned Patton Oswalt and Brian Posehn, but there were.
Well,
like
it wasn't.
Also, Zach Galifianakis.
I don't think it was. I don't know that he was on this. I looked and I didn't see his name in the.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the only ones I saw that I recognized were him, Posehn, and then that chick. But I didn't see Zach Galifianakis or whatever. I didn't see him, even though he's one of those people. Either way, I mean.
I will say, it's not theshowbox.com, because that is the official publication of the Texas Junior Livestock Association.
It's the Showbox Seattle or something. They have a, it's now owned by some other outfit, so they've got some branding thing or something with it. But you know, the for whatever reason, I just saw a Patton Oswalt YouTube thing the other day.
You know, I saw Jeff link to that, but the link to the Comedy Central video didn't work.
Well, I had already seen that before, and what's funny is he screwed up. That's only like half the joke, because he goes on a big longer riff that's way funnier. But I decided, hey, I'll look at some other ones, and I looked at another Patton Oswalt joke that it's been running through my head the whole time. He's talking about how he got hired to write punch-up jokes for, like, cartoons. So he goes in there and says, okay, well, you know, this character isn't really good, and you should probably move him around. And they're going, no. We've already filmed and done all that. What we need you to do is write funny lines that an off-screen character will say to talk over the unfunny stuff that's on screen right now, because we can't redo the animation. And he says, oh, that's great. So, and he goes on this riff about how you're watching something unfunny, but off screen, you'll say something funny. So he's talking about like Auschwitz, and some off screen character goes, I haven't seen this many ribs since I was at Tony Roma's or whatever. And then it's an awful joke. And then he follows it up by going, whackity schmackity doo, to punch it up. And I have I literally have sang Whackety Schmackety Doo 1,000 times in the last 4 days. I can't get it out of my head. I can't stop thinking about it. Patton Oswalt, he's a genius for getting under your skin with a hilarious joke.
Anyway. Okay, I just looked it up. It's Wednesday, $20 in advance. Patton Oswalt, Brian Posehn, Maria Bamford, Jasper Redd, Brent Weinbach, and Shang Wang.
Yeah, I have no idea.
Hold on. That is six comedians on the bill.
For $20?
Well, but you have to wonder, how long is each person?
I know. It's not a full set of each
one. That's kind of, like, I don't want 20 minutes of guy I don't know. I want more Patton Oswalt.
I know. Give me 40 minutes of Patton Oswalt, 30 minutes of Brian Posehn, and 10 minutes of the chick to see if she's funny. That's what I want.
No,
that's
Maria,
all I want.
Maria Bamford is funny.
Yeah.
But it's, I will, because that's presented by, I'll have to see if I can get some freebies for that one.
Yeah. Well, let me know, because I'm totally interested, but I am not going alone. So let me know if you're interested.
Yeah, but I will send an email on Monday to the promotions coordinator and see if there's any comps floating around. And if not, I'll talk to my wife and see if we can buy tickets and our schedule.
Cool.
Send me a reminder email on Monday.
I'll do that, dude.
Because I don't want to forget. All right. Well, we will, we should, wrap this thing up again. I will, no email to our email address. That's very sad. You guys rock at mustardayonnaise.com. Even if you don't think we rock, that's where you have to send it. So subliminally, you're reinforcing the fact that actually we do rock.
You could be thinking you guys suck, but you have to type you guys rock, so.
Oh, how juvenile. I love it. All right, I am Matt.
And I am Ricardo.
And thanks for listening.
Thank you.